Okay. We're up to from the Dayan's desk number 102. Okay. Tabnoki. So, topic today is borrowing or taking without permission. That's kind of the definition of Gezeila, right? So, it's one of the Ten Commandments, Lo Tigzol. Not allowed to steal from anybody. Ten Commandments in the Seres Adibos, it might be referring, as we've mentioned before, to kidnapping, but certainly Lo Tignovu is an Isser in the Torah. Not allowed to be Gozo, not allowed to be Gonev. You can't steal from somebody. So the question is there ever a case when somebody's not around and you see a tissue box and it belongs to somebody, but you need a tissue? So do we ever say it's okay, just taking a little tissue? Tissue's not going to harm anybody. It's a matchbox, you need a match.
Being less than a pruta doesn't make it.
No, if the bottle is makpid, so even less than a pruta, what we might call chatzi shir, it's still going to be usur. That's not going to make a difference. But the question is, are there circumstances in which we say that there's a minhag olam, in which there is an implied mechila, which let's say you know that if you would ask the person would probably say yes, so maybe that it would be okay, so maybe that would be all right. Do we draw a distinction between if you're taking something for good or maybe you're borrowing? You're not going to take something, you're just going to borrow it for a second. Hard to borrow a tissue. But you might borrow the tissue box, and the tissue is just really a small item within the tissue box, and the person still has the tissue box. Or maybe you borrow a pen, you use up a little bit of ink, but you're still returning the pen. So maybe there's a difference between borrowing, or what about if it's a mitzvah item? So that might be a different category. A person is not there, but you need a talis, and can you just take the person's talis? We have a principle of sometimes there's an implicit understanding that you can use a person's mitzvah item. What about a sefer? Happens all the time. You're davening Shmona Esrei, you finish before the Shliach Tzibur, and you want to learn a little bit, but you're in front of somebody's shtender in the base medrash, and it's their svarim, so can you just look inside the sefer for a few moments? So there's a whole discussion amongst the postgim about this, and of course this is very relevant. What if, for example, you're going to take an item that you think that the person wouldn't mind that you take, and you want to use that item to be Mekadesh Anisha, so that you consider it to be Mekudeshit. You're a guest in somebody's house, and you're given a piece of cake, and you're having a nice conversation with the girl who's sitting next to you at the table. And you figure, this is, somebody I might want to marry. To turn to her and say, hey, I was given this cake, Harei Et Mekudeshesli, the cake too.
But if you're given the cake, it's yours then.
Is it your cake? Let's say you wouldn't eat the cake and you would leave it there, so maybe the owner would hold on to the cake.
Still,
be a valid
it's yours, condition? You just chose to get let in.
At what point does it become yours? The whole discussion in the Maharit, if you're a guest, is it yours? You're at a wedding and you want to take home some of the extra brownies on the Viennese table. So if you can eat as many as you want, nobody's going to throw you out. But what if you decide you're going to pack up some and bring to your family? Is that okay? Is that considered to be stealing? So the starting point is the Gemara in Bava Metzia, Daf Kopei, Samin Aleph. We have a story with the Meir Mazutra and Ravashi. They all went to an orchard that belonged to Mari Bar Isuk. And his aris, his sharecropper, came in and he bought some fruit, some dates and some pomegranates from the field, Bashad the Kamayo, and offered that Mari Bar Isuk wasn't there, it was just his sharecropper who was there. Now the sharecropper would be entitled to a share of the crops, that's why he's called a sharecropper. But some of the crops would eventually go to him, but it's not clear that this was what he would eventually take. This is Kodim Chaluka, before they divided up the various crops. It could be, from the sharecropper's perspective, this is going to be from the crops of Mari Bar Isuk, but nonetheless, he feels that Mari Bar Isuk, the owner of the property, wouldn't mind to have the Tamine Chachamim, who came to visit him, eat some of his crops. So Maim and Ravashi had no problem with it. They said, great, we like pomegranates and we like dates, so they ate them. Mazutra lo achil. Mazutra was worried. When Mari Bar Isuk's not here, they haven't yet split the crops, and maybe the sharecropper is giving Mari Bar Isuk's portion, and who knows if Mari Bar Isuk would be okay with this. So then Mari Bar Isuk came along, And he said to the sharecropper, not to shame on you, but he said, huh, amino Isis lo levabadim hanuk shapirtu, why don't you give them better fruits? You gave them okay fruits, but I have even better fruits. So that's a way of kind of indicating that he was happy with it. Like, for example, the Tosefta has the case of a person who decides to take some truma, unbeknownst to the owner, from the owner's field. The owner comes along and says, klach etzo yafos. You're taking some truma from me, go and take better truma. So the halacha is, if there really was better crops, better grains that the person could have taken the truma from, so then we say that the owner was serious, that he wasn't just saying it as a sarcastic comment, he meant it seriously. I'm happy you're taking truma, and I'd rather you take even better truma. But if you don't find better truma, so then it's considered to be sort of a sarcastic or scornful comment, and then we say that the truma, since it wasn't authorized, would not be considered to be valid truma. So do we apply that principle over here, since there was better fruit? And Mari Barisik, when he came, said, why don't you take from the better troop, but from the better fruit? So Amemer and Ravashi said to Marzutra that why don't you guard yourself based on that principle, now that you see that the sharecrop, that the Mari Barisik said that he would have been happy if the sharecropper had taken from the better fruit. So Amalahu, so Marzutra had a rejoinder. He said, no. The case of the truma is different. Why is the case of the truma different? Because that's a case of a mitzvah. That's a case of a mitzvah. Hachi amalahu, hachi amarav, lo amu klachet, so yafo selinyan truma, bavad mishum de mitzvah. It's called nichusa de mitzvah. The idea of nichusa de mitzvah is an idea that you find articulated by the ksos in the simon ksos achoshin and simon shin and ches tachoshin mishpat and elsewhere. The ksos says that this is really halacha lemaisa. That we assume that a person is happy for their produce, their crops, their possessions to be used for mitzvah purposes, so there's a more lenient standard. But here, if it's not for a mitzvah purpose, then when the person says, oh, go and take from better crops, so it's because Mari Barisuk was sort of embarrassed at the situation and didn't want anybody to feel bad that they had taken what he would not otherwise have given them. They already took it. The Meimar and Ravashi had already eaten from the fruit, so therefore it was sort of an embarrassing situation, but not that he necessarily meant it with a full heart. So then the question is, how do we paskin for this type of situation? Yes.
He probably said it because they ate already.
Yes, so that's the question. There's a story I read in the Sefer Mamon Kosher where some story with the Chofetz Chaim and the Lubavitcher Rebbe were in an inn together. It sounds like the beginning of like a little, I don't know, joke, a folk tale. But the Chofetz Chaim apparently desperately needed a piece of paper to write on and couldn't find it anywhere. So Lubavitcher Rebbe said, here, I have a piece of paper, you could take it. And the Chofetz Chaim refused to take it unless he accepted 2 kopecks from him. He said, if you don't accept the coins, I'm not going to take it. And there was some Askin who was with them, I guess who didn't have paper, who said the Lubavitcher Rebbe, two kopecks don't mean anything to him. He doesn't need the 2 kopecks. So it could be he doesn't need the 2 kopecks, but I don't need to be guilty of gazela.
Because he's only giving
it to me because he sees that I'm in distress, and therefore it's like kisipusi, like the Gemara says, kisipusa, that he feels bad about the situation. He'd be embarrassed not to give it to me, but not necessarily that he's willing to give it to me for nothing.
But after the fact, can't make it right in the first place to have taken it.
That's a real question. Can you not make it right after the fact? So that's a question that the Tosos addresses. That's source number 2 over here. The Tosos in Bava Metzia, Daf Chof Beis Amud Aleph, says, it can't be that anybody would think that this is okay after the fact. It can't be that a Meimer and Ravashi really thought that it's okay because eventually the owner is going to be happy with the fact that they received the fruits. At the time, the owner didn't know that they're taking his fruits. So he says, we have a principle. Yesh lo midas lo havi yesh. Machlokes Abaye and Rava about if you find an item where the owner is eventually going to despair, he's going to be miyayish from ever recovering the item. But right now, when you find it, He hasn't despaired yet. So if he knew you had the item at this point in time, he would run and he would pick up the item. He would take it from you. It's only 5 days from now. Maybe he's going to despair. And then the item's still in your possession. So do you get to keep the item? So Abaye says, no, you don't get to keep the item. That's called Yeush Lo Midas. At the time that the item came to your possession, there wasn't really Yeush yet. There would be Yeush later on. When the person would figure out that he's missing the item, but when it came into your possession, Shalom Midas, he didn't know he's missing the item. He would have been happy to take the item from you at that point in time. So therefore, it doesn't count that later on he's going to be Miyayish. So Tosfos says this is the same thing, that later on, sure, the person's going to decide that he's happy that these rabbanim made from his food, but right now he doesn't know about it. Right now it's like a Yeush Shalom Midas. He doesn't know about it. So since we paskin like a bayit, therefore it's asur. And the only reason why Meimer and Mavashi ate from the fruit is because they must have held that there was an assumption that whatever the sharecropper gave them was from the sharecropper's portion. And Zutra was a little bit more more nervous about it. Ayakoshish Mazutra Shemashas Kalukalo Yomar, the Baraparis Titok and Egan Mashinasati Lahem. Maybe when the time of splitting the crops would come, the sharecropper wouldn't say, oh, I took this for myself and you take a corresponding portion, Mari Barisik, for yourself. However, Amemar and Ravashi weren't worried about that. They felt that this is a portion that the sharecropper is going to claim for himself, and therefore the question never got off the ground altogether. But if it really would be a situation where you didn't have a sharecropper, for example, it's just a question of somebody else decides to give you what's in the owner's home, and you're relying upon the fact that, oh, well, I know that good old Shmuley, when he finds out that we took this item, he's not going to be upset. So says, no. That's Yeush Lo Midas Lo Havi Yeush, and therefore you wouldn't be allowed to do that.
If a maid would serve something?
So if a maid would serve something, so that's a question. Does she have implied authority? It's like, you know, you go to a store, and the person who is at the checkout, and a person decides to give you a discount, on one of the food items, so you have to ask yourself, do they have implied authority? If they have implied authority, so then you can rely upon them. But if not someone, it's not someone who has the implied authority, they can't give away what belongs to somebody else. And that's what some of the poskim here speak about. Is there an umden das?
Mm-hmm. What about
well, do we assume that this person, has authorized, the hafnat, you're saying, does that make it into a mitzvah item, by itself, the mitzvah situation? Because of Hachnasas Orchim. It's a good question. Maybe because of Hachnasas Orchim. So they have the right to assume that when Mari Barisik comes home, that he'll give them something good, and that'll be the Hachnasas Orchim.
I guess you go to the guy's house and sleep in his bed.
Right.
Let me change the situation just slightly. You're in a grocery store, and there's a bunch of grapes. Can you take one of those grapes to taste it to see if you want to buy it or not? Maybe that's the story that...
Why don't you try it and let me know what happens?
Rabbi, I did try it.
Okay.
It happened to be there was a Kollel guy over there, and I happened to tell him they would love it if you taste it, because you're tasting it not just because you're a chazer, because if it tastes ripe enough, you're going to buy it. And he didn't believe me, and we called that person over and said, is there any problem for us tasting it? She said, absolutely not.
Right, so according to Tosos, from that moment onward, when the person said, absolutely not, there's no problem, it would have been perfectly fine. But before the person said that, Tosos says you wouldn't really be able to necessarily rely upon it.
But this is, if you believe now, this is a practice normal for...
So let's say that it had previously been the practice. So let's look at the Shita Mekubetzis and the Chidush Eritba, this kind of talk about this question. So the Shita Mekubetzis, Sam, these are good questions. The Shita Mekubetzis quotes the Rashba, who says that the truth is afilu leis lechok abeperi shari, even if the sharecropper didn't have any rights to these particular fruits, that they definitely belong to Mari Bar Yisuk, it would be perfectly okay. Why is that? The fisha umden das, because he says like Sam, he says umden das hu she'ein bala pardes makrid bekach bekach nagu. He says if it's known that this is the minog, that the minog is you could taste the grapes and not get into trouble, and this is what they want you to do. If there's a clear minog, a clear custom that this is what's done, maybe this is the custom of what's done, as Moshe Menachem suggested, for Chnasas Orchim purposes, that everybody gives this. If that's the clear minog, so then you would be allowed to take it. And he calls him a Tosefta, Toseftim Bava Kama, that says that a son, for example, even though he doesn't own all of the items that are in his parents' pantry or refrigerator, it's understood when he comes home from yeshiva, you want the son to be able to take. Now, do you want the son to bring all of his friends and eat all the food that you had set aside for Shabbos when they're visiting, you know, Erev Shabbos in the afternoon? Not necessarily. But at least as far as the son is concerned, they would want him to take a little bit. And it would even be okay if you give your son something. It's understood that you give him a portion. He can give a little bit of portion to one of his friends. And so too, a guy by Tztaka who comes to the door, if the assumption is that this is a traditional household where we say that kol shekanse isha kana baila, that everything that belongs, that goes to the wife, belongs to the husband. All the possessions of the house belong to the husband because he takes care, he gives mizonos, he takes care of his wife. So he owns everything. So is the wife allowed to give some tzedakah? The husband's not home. Is she allowed to give some tzedakah? I mean, my wife is concerned. Somebody knocks on the door, and who knows if the person is just some sort of a menace who, you know, is posing as a mishulach. So she's afraid to open up the door altogether. But, you know, if she wouldn't be afraid to open up the door, and the person, she takes out some money because I'm not home, so would she be permitted to do that? So says the Tosefta, yes, bedava muat, as long as she's not giving, you know, $1 million, she's just giving a $5 bill or something like that. So that would be a dava muat, would be perfectly acceptable, because that's the minhag. The minhag is that it's understood that everybody is prepared to give away from their possessions for these purposes, to let their children take for themselves a little nash, even give to their friends a little nash for one's wife, to give some money to an ani. This is all based on minhag. So as long as this is the minhag, so then it becomes an established understanding that there's an authorization that is not going to be revealed later on. So it's not going to be a problem. Yir shalom midas is an authorization that is built in from the very beginning. Mitam minhag, the authorization is already there. The Ritva goes further, and the Ritva says that it doesn't have to be a public minhag. It doesn't have to be a public minhag. It could be that it's just known about this particular person. Like, you know, Sam, it could be you knew about this particular store. You knew based on past practice and experience that in this particular store, they're happy for people to eat from the grapes. Presumably not all the grapes, but, you know, to have one grape. So you know that this is the minhag. So, or this is the practice, I should say. So the Ritva says, if it was known that he was the type of personality who would want that his nechasim be used to benefit Tamidei Chachamim. And since, obviously, Amem Mazutra Ravashi were all Tamidei Chachamim, this is exactly what he has his food for, that he wants his food to go towards Tamidei Chachamim. Not, the Chiddush of the Ritva is that it's not that it was known by any of these Tamidei Chachamim that he ever did this before for any other Tamidei Chachamim, but there was an established umdanon, an established very clear and compelling presumption that they knew that he would automatically give to all Tamidei Chachamim, and he gives I'm sorry?
That doesn't answer the question. If you're not a Talmid Chacham,
if you wouldn't be a Talmid Chacham, it wouldn't work. According to this, it would only work for those class of people where there was a clear understanding and presumption that he would always give it to them. And he compares it, interestingly enough, although some of the later authorities question this comparison, including the Pesachei Choshen, they say, Kidamina Mizuto Shoya. That if you had a gush of water that would suddenly take away all of a person's possessions in some major storm where the water carries out a person's belongings to sea, and they don't ever expect to see it again. That's what we call avuda mimenu v'avuda mikol adam. So then we say that it's almost as if it's been made hefker. Now, the comparison to Zuto Shoyam is not a perfect comparison, some of the Meforshim say, because in the case of Zuto Shoyam, where it's really been taken away from the person, we assume that there's a zero expectation that they'll ever get it back. So then if somebody else took it, and the original owner finds it in somebody else's possession and starts screaming and yelling, "How dare you take it?" Then they're still not entitled to get it back because it was made hefker, basically, by this principle of zuto shoyam. How if you had fierce ties that took the person's belongings away in some giant storm. But In this particular case, if the owner is screaming and yelling, Mari Beristik would say, hey, don't take my dates and pomegranates, so then we wouldn't apply this principle. So it's not exactly Pizuto Shoyab, but the idea is that it's like a built-in hefker that enables them to take it based on the presumption that this is what Mari Bar Isik would want. But that's neither the Shita Mikubetsa nor the Ritva are addressing a situation where, let's say, there was no minhag, and there was no clear presumption that was built in that Mari Bar Isik would automatically, a person like Mari Bar Isik would automatically want Talmidei Chachamim to be able to enjoy his possessions. If you didn't have that built in, it's just you kind of made a conjecture. You made a conjecture that you have a tissue box or something, and you say, I'm pretty sure that this fellow is not going to mine. There isn't a clear minhag, but you say, I know this guy, I know Rabbi Biber, he's a nice fellow, he's always smiling. If I take the tissue, he's not going to mind if I tell him afterwards. For example, when I worked as a law firm associate, so there was one time that I came in on a Sunday afternoon. There was nobody, this was a big Wall Street firm. There was nobody else. It was like the springtime. Nobody else was working on a Sunday afternoon because they all worked on Shabbos. So it was Sunday is like the day everybody takes off. So there were plenty of non-Jews in the firm. So I had to mark up a particular document, and I needed in those days, we did have computers, but it's not like everything was done on computers. You didn't like mark up documents on the computer. We didn't have like this feature where you press a button and you have a red line and you could have comments in the margins. That's a more recent invention. We would mark things up by hand, and you had to underline very, very neatly, and you had to make neat little bubbles around, you know, the clearly legible words that you wrote on the side with your corrections. But it was very important to have very neat underlines, and I couldn't find a ruler anywhere, and I looked all over the place, and finally, I found not a ruler, but something that resembled a ruler. I didn't know what it was at the time. It turned out it was a nail file that was on one of the desks of one of the secretaries, and I was desperate, and I reasoned to myself, you know, look, we're all working for the same good cause, and I'm sure the secretary wouldn't mind if I used, you know, this, whatever it is, the nail file, in order to do the underlines, and I did the underlines, and it was very good, you know, thank God. Afterwards, I went to Avor, which is the time in which I met my wife-to-be for the first time, so that was very nice. But beforehand, I was there, and I was underlining with this ruler, and with this nail file, and much to my horror, after I finished all of the underlining, I discovered there were ink spots and blotches all over the nail file, and I was so embarrassed. So I wrote this whole apologetic note to the secretary, you know, who I am, and that I took this nail file and did whatever, but, you know, I appreciated it because it helped me, you know, advance the course of the firm by marking up these documents. And then the next day, she got in touch with me, and she was, like, laughing and thought that it was the funniest thing, and it was okay, and no problem, and it's all good and fine. But I was assessing that she wouldn't mind afterwards, right? You know, and that's a question mark. So according to Tosfos, is it clear that this would be okay? Do we say, oh, that there's a built-in presumption that all secretaries want, like, law firm associates who have a smicha degree to be able to benefit from their nail files? I don't know that you can necessarily build in that presumption. So the Shulchan Aruch talks about just sort of
the nail files on the desk.
It's on the desk, but it's on her desk with her personal items. I don't know. It wasn't such a simple call. So
I work at University of Chicago, and assuming he's going to the hospital, right? So there are cups for the patients, right?
Right.
So sometimes you take a cup to drink. So the director of radiology is walking through. I said, is it okay if I just take a paper cup to drink? The response to me was corporate theft.
Ooh, okay. That's a very cheerful environment over there. Okay, so now the Shulchan Aruch and Kol Shemishpat Hilchos Gzeila Siman Shin and Tes. Also, Ligzo Lashak Afilu Kol Shibayin So Me Miyovik Kacham. You can't steal from anybody, Jew and non-Jew. V'mudavet Leikaman to Kapi Beishoi. But if it's something that nobody cares about, then you don't have to worry about it. What would be an example of something that nobody cares about? V'yom Nito Me'achavilo Me'aged Laksas Boshinov. If there's, for example, a fence that somebody has, and there are wood chips on the fence, you want to use the wood chip as a toothpick in order to just floss your teeth, so that would be okay. But there's a story in the Yerushalmi about that. The Yerushalmi says that even though it's technically okay, you should still refrain from doing it. As a special act of piety, it's or a character trait of piety, it's appropriate to abstain even from doing that, despite the fact that it would be permissible. The poskim give examples.
Is it because it's a private fence?
It's definitely a private fence. The Aruch HaShulchan gives examples of this, like if you would take a match out of a matchbox, or you would take some hot water out of an urn. Nobody's going to be mocked, presumably. That's kind of like a minhag that everybody holds that it's okay. But nonetheless, the Yerushalmi says that you should refrain from doing it as a Midas Chasidus. What's the nature of this Midas Chasidus? So the Sma says that it's kind of like what they used to do in Stom, according to the Gemara. In Stom, everybody would take like a tiny little less than shava puta, piece of whatever, fruit were lying around, and then eventually it would all be gone. So that's what the Sma says, that Yidu Osa Ken Kol Echad, if everybody would do this, everybody would follow Sam's example. You wouldn't have any grapes here. So Nimsa Chavila Kala, Vegeta Neros. Right, so he says so.
The grapes is called debasing.
Right.
If you take a look at a coin, you'll see there's ridges around it.
Right.
Beforehand, when they made things, they made it by weight, and everybody just peeled off just a little bit of it.
Right, so the Chazanish says that's not really what we're worried about. We're not worried that people are going to do the people of Stom, Chas v'Shalom, if there would be a sense that the public would have that this is really getting depleted and you're not going to have a fence left anymore because everybody's taking a little wood chip until the whole fence will come down, so people are not going to go so far. But he says, Mikol Makom, this is Tor Zayin, Rai Lifosh Mishim Shadom Magi L'Zazo Begezel. It's going to lead to a desensitization regarding theft altogether if you're going to take items that don't strictly belong to you, even when nobody cares about it. And not only that, he says that you have to be worried that if you're going to do this, so other people will say, ha, Sam's taking a grape, to sample, so I'm going to steal a cereal box. People might go too far and think that this is one thing is going to allow other things that clearly are going to cause a hepsate, as the Chazanish said. So therefore, that's why we have the Midas Chasidus. What about the example of the Gemara, the example of the Ares, the sharecropper, Tosfos, where Tosfos speaks about it's only a sharecropper situation, but if it would be a regular person, and there is no clear minhag, and it's not necessarily the sort of thing that nobody cares about, you have dates and pomegranates that people do generally care about, it's just your assessment is that this person is not going to care, and they're going to be okay with it. Do we worry about the Shiyo Shalom Midas arguments? The Shach quotes the Yir Shalom Midas argument in Simen Shin Nun Ches, and says that Iladis Mistapina, if I was not fearful of disagreeing with Tosfos, because who am I to disagree with Tosfos, I would have disagreed with Tosfos. This is a very nice way when an Achron wants to take issue with what a Rishon says. You say something, Iladis, if I wasn't fearful, what I would have said, and that's really what you actually are saying. So he says that what I would have said is that I disagree with Tosfos. Hayisi Omer Shemutter, I would have said that this is Mutter, and it's not a case of Yir Shalom Midas. Yir Shalom Midas means that at the time that you're at, that the item comes into your possession, the owner really doesn't want it to come into your possession. The owner would rather have the item back, and the owner gives up hope afterwards. That's a different heter that you get to keep the item after this Yush. But in this particular case, from the very beginning, from the outset, there's an expectation that even if the owner knew right now that I'm taking the food, the owner would be happy with it. The owner's not going to come home until later, but the owner's not that the owner's only going to be happy later on.
That's
the owner would have been happy.
That's just of him being happy.
He's saying it's not a Yir Shalom Midas kind of situation, because in that case, at the very beginning, the person would not have wanted to relinquish the item. But here, the owner would relinquish the item from the very outset. So therefore, the Shach thinks that in this particular case, if you really are confident that the person is going to be perfectly happy afterwards, like in my tissue case. Now you could say a tissue is the sort of thing that maybe nobody's mocked about if you take a tissue, right? But even if it would be something more substantial, it would be your nail file, okay? Or it would be something, it would be your fingernail clipper or something like that. Or maybe some people would be mocked about it. Your shaver. Some people are mocked that they shouldn't have other people, but with Rabbi Biber, I'm not really worried. If I need a shaver, okay, I'm saying to myself, if Rabbi Biber knows that I need a shaver and I'm going to use it, and he'll only find out about it afterwards, I know that he would be happy not only afterwards.
Well, he wouldn't have to use so much shaver.
So, but I know that he would be happy even at the moment. He would have been happy that I used it. So therefore, can I rely upon that? Says the Shach that I would be perfectly within my rights to rely upon that, and there would really be a machlokus between the Shach and Tosfos. And then the question is, do we paskin like the Shach, or do we paskin like Tosfos? And here you have modern day authorities actually sort of disagree. I saw an article in the Sefer called Umkud Dedina, which is from Nesivas HaMishpat, Bezdin of Yosef Fleischman in Eretz Yisrael, in Yerushalayim and Matis Dorf. They put out a publication called Umkud Dedina, and there was an article there by Rav Vind. Rav Vind said, Minhag Olam LaHakil. He thinks that the Minhag Olam is to be Maker like the Shach, and the truth is that the Nesivas HaMishpat happens to just kind of quote the Shach as a matter of course, sort of in passing. So it appears, you know, certainly from those authorities that we would follow the Shach. Nesivas HaMishpat is in the beginning of Siman Reish Mem Daled, but the Tzos in Siman Shin Nun Ches and in Siman Reish Samach Beis in both places says, no, we really follow Tosfos, and the only time that we would follow sort of the principle of assuming that the person would want it at the beginning, therefore that gives us the right to do it, is when it's like the case of Truma, when it's for some sort of a mitzvah purpose. It's for some sort of a mitzvah purpose, we could say like the Ritva a little bit, it's like a Zutel Shoyam, it's like the Hefker, the Torah is being, you know, mafgir these items so that we would be able to use it for mitzvah purposes. So it's kind of like a superimposed hefker for the purpose of enabling people to perform a mitzvah, but otherwise we wouldn't necessarily follow that approach. So it's really a machlokes l'dinah. Yes, what did you want to ask, Sam? Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, it seems to me that the examples that we're using are very petty items. So if you take these same situations but give value to the items, maybe $500, maybe $10,000, that the principles can't apply. These presumptions of this presumption that the guy would want me to have it, if Sam wasn't sampling grapes, but was sampling something of greater value, maybe $10, maybe $15, maybe $20, I don't think they would be as happy as they would be for a 10-cent grape.
But what if I know the person would be happy? Like, you know, we speak about a minhag.
You're in a store, you don't know.
The minhag is davar mu'ah, but you're right. If you're in a store, you don't necessarily know.
Well, almost anything that's worth a penny.
Unless there was prior practice, right? Well, let's say it's something which is worth a lot more. Like, you're not only going to take one grape, you're going to take a whole cluster. You're going to take an entire container of vegetarian liver, okay? Because you want to see, is this something which is worthwhile for me to buy? So I'm just going to try one right now, see if I'm satiated, if I enjoy it, if it has a good aftertaste. I'm going to eat like the entire container. So that might be, you know, a little bit going overboard, right?
But the assumption that I could make as to a grape, I can't make as to something worth $40.
Unless maybe you have experience with this person from the past, right?
I don't have experience.
Ah, right, exactly. So that's what the Shulchan Aruch Harav says. The Shulchan Aruch Harav draws a distinction between two different types of cases. We've been discussing up until now taking something. You took the dates, you took the pomegranates, there's nothing left. You took the wood chip, you took the tissue, there's nothing left from them. But there's also the possibility I'm borrowing something, like my case of the shaver, right? The case of the shaver, I'm just borrowing. I have a much greater level of confidence that Rabbi Barber's not going to mind. But I'm not actually sure. Although with Rabbi Barber, like, you know, he's such a nice guy that, you know, I might be able to stretch it a little bit. But I'm not sure if I decide I'm going to take the shaver, never give it back to him ever because I really need a shaver. I'm not sure. It could be he'll say, well, Rabbi Reese, you know, I really respect you, and of course, if you need the shaver, it's fine. But in his head, he's thinking, what is going on over here? Like, he'll say, keep it. But, like, you know, deep down, he's thinking, this is, like, weird. This, it's okay. He's Rabbi Reese, and I like him, so I'll let him have the shaver. This is weird already. And he's not going to necessarily be so happy about it. So, so the Shulchan Aruch of the Baal HaTanya draws a distinction between borrowing on the one hand and taking on the other hand. So in the Hilchos Mitzio Pikadon, where he's talking about taking, he says, "Afilu borlo kishibadu levalo shinolo zayismuchu v'yagilu v'nei abasa moso," that even if you're going to actually take something, even if you know that the owner is going to be rejoicing because of his great love that you took something, nonetheless, "Asulo lehanus bablo dasabalim," you're not allowed to take it without his explicit permission, without his knowledge. And therefore,
if you go for taking, correct.
And therefore, if you go to the orchard or the garden of your fellow, you're not allowed to pick up peros without the knowledge of the owner. Even though this is your best friend. Okay? Asher kenafsho, mamish. And he's going to like burst out in, you know, in song. You know, he's going to sing, you know, Haba Nagila, whatever, because she had there, though. Shenene zeh mi peyrosa, mikomakam kim she'akshav enu yudeh mi zeh, harehu kinene be'isr. Therefore, it's considered to be a prohibited benefit. V'chenko k'yotze b'zeh. And therefore, he says, there are many people who mess up in this regard because they just know that the person's not going to arrive. He says, what's actually taking, so he's not comfortable. But in the next sif, which I did not actually duplicate in the materials, but this is sif dalin, Hilchos Metzia Pikadon, is a sif hay. So in sif hay, he quotes kind of the heterim of the Rashba and the Ritva. If it's something that nobody really cares about, it's okay. A little tissue, a little match from the matchbox, a little hot water from the hot water urn. And he goes on to say, and if there's a minhag, for example, the minhag that in every store they allow you to take a grape to taste it, so then you can rely on the minhag, you can rely upon the things nobody's makpid about, all that. Then he adds something. He adds something in parentheses. It says, v'chein, and so too, b'pardesim hu ragyo bo lechem peiros v'idas habal mutar. So too, if you have past experience, if you have past experience in this particular orchard with this particular owner, that the owner has allowed you to eat from their fruit, to pick the peaches, you know, with your children, you say, you go on Chol HaMoed trips or whatever, assuming that would be okay, and you're going to, you know, just take the peaches and pluck them off and eat them right then and there and enjoy them, but you're taking a whole bunch of peaches. So only if this person had previously given you permission to do this, then it would be perfectly okay, even though they didn't give you permission this time around. So that's a chiddush. That really goes right, but they didn't give you permission this time around. But the Rashba, the Rav Tanya says that is also something that we would be make about, even if you don't hold like the shach. It would say that if you can be make all if you think the person will be okay afterwards. If you have experience where the person has allowed you to do it in the past. So then that allows you to have this presumption that it's not going to be like a Yish Shalom Midas situation. The person has furnished their das. They furnished their das ahead of time that they're okay with your taking their stuff, with your going to their orchard and taking off a bunch of peaches and eating like a lot of stuff, more than what would be de minimis, but nonetheless where they have demonstrated that it's okay. So then that would also be considered to be a hetzer for these types of situations. And often that's the case. If, for example, in your firm, if you've asked a bunch of times, oh, is it okay for me to make a photocopy using the firm's copy machine because I have to make a copy of my tax returns, I have to make a copy of some personal items, not hundreds of pages, but, you know, a few pages, can I do that? And they've said to you a number of times, yes, yes, it's okay. So you don't have a chance. Now you're alone in the office, it's a weekend, you have nobody to ask. But nonetheless, there is a prior practice where you've been given permission in the past, so according to the Baal HaTanya, you'd be able to rely upon that. If you hadn't asked in the past, and you're just relying upon the fact, oh, they'll probably say it's okay, so then you have the machlokas between the Tosfos and the Shach in that situation. The Baal HaTanya would seem to say, even according to Tosfos, it would be okay if you did have prior experience of the person giving you permission. Yes, Rabbi Zelda.
Okay, so back to the borrowing guy, I had a question, so while you got to the end of this point, in the borrowing situation, you know, the difference with a shaver is something personal you're putting up against your skin and things like that. But what about a safer? You get to shul at the last minute of the night, and there's a safer there that is somebody's. You say, you know, I can take it home and study it tonight. I'll be there before he gets there in the morning and put it back, but I didn't ask him permission. And I wanted to know how that falls into the schedule.
It's an excellent, excellent question. You know, I sometimes have this dilemma, actually, sometimes when I'm davening, about whether I should have a sefer nearby just for the end of Chazar Sashatz. I've discovered many times as soon as I finish Chazar Sashatz, that's when the Chazan begins Kash. It doesn't really work for me anyway. But let's say that, you know, I'd be in a place where, you know, it could potentially work for me. I actually, you know, I used to do that. I would have a sefer right nearby that I knew I could just pick up as soon as I would finish Chazar Sashatz. And I realized that's not a good thing because that might subconsciously motivate me to say a faster Shemona Esrei, so I'll have more time to learn afterwards. So I realize that's actually not a good thing. But you're asking a different question, which is, what if you're going to take the safer home? You're going to take the safer home and then bring it back early in the morning and nobody will notice the difference. So we'll get to that in just a moment. It's a very, very good question. But first, that
it's a talis. When you borrow someone's talis, take it with you and bring it back.
Right, but the case of the talis, the case of the talis is Paskin the Shulchan Aruch or Chaim Simon Yudalid. that you are allowed to take a person's talis because it's assumed nicha initial mitzvah, but then you find it folded up, you use it on that occasion, and then you return it to its place, you fold it up nicely in exactly the state that you found it. You're not really supposed to take it home with you. You're supposed to leave it right there. So, but it's a little bit more than that, because when you're asking about a sefer, there's a distinction which is drawn in the Shulchan Aruch between the case of the talis and the case of the sefer. It says, well, of course, everyone's comfortable if you take their talis. That's no big deal. That's what talisim are there for. But a sefer, oh, a sefer is very precious. It's very delicate. It can rip very easily, get creased, who knows what. It's expensive. So therefore, no, you can't assume that a person is going to be comfortable taking their sefer. And some of the contemporary poskim say, what are you talking about? So the Prima Gadim asked the question. See, now you made me discuss it. The Prima Gadim asked the question, what exactly is the basis of people being makel nowadays to allow their svarim to be used? To the other way around. For people to assume that people are allowing their svarim to be used, and for individuals to take each other's svarim, when the Shulchan Aruch seems to be very clear that svarim would not be something that you are permitted to take.
In those days, they didn't have printing presses, and svarim were a lot harder to produce.
Right, so that's what the Aruch HaShulchan says. So if you want to jump a little bit, and we'll go back to the Baal HaTanya in a second. So the Aruch HaShulchan, if you look on source, I guess it's Yud Tes over here, in Kol Shemishpat Siman Ayin Beis, he says, also Likach Sefer Michaver Shlomi Daito, you're not allowed to take a sefer from somebody without their doubt, without their knowledge, because that's considered to be like a gazlan, unless you take the talis and tefillin. Talis and tefillin, so we assume that you're taking Beikroi, just on a temporary basis, that you'll be allowed to take it because we say Nikolai Lenish Lasos Mitzvah Kala Kizub in Mamone, but Svarim can very easily get ruined and it costs a lot of money. So the Aruch HaShulchan says, this halacha doesn't apply nowadays. We have a printing press nowadays. When we originally had the distinction between Svarim and other items, that's before Svarim was so rampant. But nowadays, says Nielis Yachalito Limo Bo B'Shach Kala Shlomi Daita. You could take it for a small, short amount of time, but only a small, short amount of time, the same way that you would take the talis utfilin. Imlo Shiyodea Shebalim Makpid Demezeh. Unless you know that the Balim are really Makpid. But it would be very clear that this is not something that would be permissible to take home if the idea is that it's just a Bikrai B'Shach Kala for a small period of time, unless you know that there's a clear minug in the shul, that the shul allows people to take this farm home, or that if it belongs to a particular person, that you know that this person in the past has allowed you to do it, or that this person writes inside their sefer, please feel free to take this sefer home as long as you return early in the morning. Nobody is going to say that. No probability, because people forget to bring back svarim.
Right.
People with the best of intentions, okay? The most pious individuals take out a sefer with every intention to return it the following morning, and they forget. And you know what else? They forget to return it the morning afterwards as well. And sometimes this can go on for several days, several weeks, several months, several years. So you have to be very careful with svarim. Often when somebody comes to borrow a sefer, I know what they're really asking is, can you please give me the sefer? So you have to make a decision. Do you really want to give them the sefer or not give them the sefer? Borrowing a sefer is a very tricky business. But to learn it right there, so that would be perfectly okay. If you look at the Hovos Nason of Rav Nason Gishtetner, so the Hovos Nason in Choshe Mishpat Simen Kof Chapei, so he also talks about a distinction between the Zmanim HaKadmonim. He says that it used to be that the svarim were very expensive, so people were makpid. About b'zman hazeh dikas svarim tuva v'akshe darish asom isuim miyad kol echad yesh lo mandavik beged hefsid muat. So if you're going to cause a smudge or a crease or even a tiny little rip, hopefully that won't happen because that's more serious, but whatever happens through the normal wear and tear and usage of a sefer when it's used for a brief moment, so we say for that type of a hefsin mu'ar, we would say the nichalei linish the mevan mitzvah be mamone. The truth is, if you cause actual damage, then you would be responsible for the damage. But he says that he's not 100% sure that this would be true for the bachurei yeshivos, for those who are in yeshivos and aren't necessarily such rich people, and their set of ritva or little mini shas might be very valuable to them, and they might be worried about, know, getting a smudge or a crease on it. So he says, therefore, the Eitzah Yehutzah is that the Rosh Yeshiva, the official Menalim, the administrators, the Rosh Yeshiva of any yeshiva, should get up, or they should post signs and rules and regulations on the bulleted boards. Yodiyo b'piska d'rabim, shekol sefer muknas l'beis medrash, she'enu rashum alav, that any sefer which is in the beis medrash, and it's not written on the sefer, shebal makpidish lo lumo mehen. Sometimes I'll pick up a sefer to learn from it in a base medrash, I'll discover that it says inside, you know, you do not have permission to use the sefer, okay? Most of the time, and it won't say that, it'll say, you know, please use the sefer, it'll say nothing, so then you'll be allowed to use it. But as long as it doesn't say, Shabbat makpidim shalom bahem rashayim, I mean, this is like when I was in yeshiva a month or two ago. I saw this like a shtender that has a very, you know, strong sign in it. This is absolutely usher for anybody to use this shtender, you know, other than, you know, that's the name of the person. So okay, so you're scared away. But shayim called tamidim lishtamish bahem. But otherwise, everybody would be allowed to use it. But
a member of a shul, and the shul has a sifriya, right?
Yes.
So technically, since you're a member of the shul and you pay dues...
That's a sifriya. Here we're talking about somebody's private sfarim. But daita d'achim iskabim atamidim yeshiva nosim lemeshus likanes. This is part of the expectations of being a tam in yeshiva, that you let people use this sfarim in its place. And it's like a tanai Yoshua, like we say that Yoshua ben Nun made various tanaim, apply to everybody in terms of allowing the property to be used for various public purposes. When we entered into Eretz Yisrael, butzarach rabim kdei sheikashlu b'sheila shlomidas, and this is necessary so that there not be a problem with sheila shlomidas. Now, if you go back, because this is all sheila shlomidas, you're not taking the sefer, you're borrowing the sefer, and it also has the advantage of what the Baal HaTanya talks about in getting back to a source good base, where he talks about in the context of Shoal. This is beforehand. He was talking in Hilchos Mesio Pigod, and this is the Baal HaTanya here in Hilchos Shelo Skirus. So here he says about Asa, the second line, about Asa Leilach the base Kaver Likvos Shem Misipu Apilu Bikrai Shlomi Daito. You're not allowed to go into your friend's house to go and take out his sefer without his knowing. You walk through his front door, you go to his base medrash, you take out his sefer and didn't tell him. But then he does have a carve out. He says, in this particular case, even though you didn't get explicit permission, you just know this is the sort of guy who's happy to have people come to his house to look at Svarim, even if you don't have any past experience. You don't have any past experience. You just know he's the sort of guy that you say, oh, by the way, I stopped by your house and I looked at your Nefesh HaChayim. He'll say, oh, wow, I'm so happy you did that. Elim ken yadu alo bibiror, shelo yakbir alo ba'al chepetz ushu davar shein davar kobanei adon lahakbir alo klab nishen kshash hefzit v'koko klab b'tash mishazet. So in addition to sort of the general category that people are not makpid, which would be true even about taking an item, like a tissue, he says that he throws in this additional category, if you know that it's a type of item, shelo yakpid ala bala chepis. The bala chepis will not be makpid, so then that also will be considered to be a sufficient basis for you to be able to borrow the item. So we see that we have more of a lenient approach, potentially, when it comes to borrowing, than when it comes to taking. Then when it comes to borrowing, so then there is more of a basis to rely upon this idea of the shach, if you know that the person is going to be comfortable, so then you'll be allowed to take it. And it could be that even Tosfos would agree with the shach when it comes to a case of borrowing, as opposed to a case of taking. Yes?
Rabbi, if I read this technically, a person comes to somebody, picks up a book, is standing there and reading it.
Yes.
What is the over? There was no kinyan there, there's no transference of, it was just simply reading something.
It doesn't matter, you're taking somebody's object without their permission, so if you take a look in...
You're not taking it.
If you don't take it. Take a look at the Shulchan Aruch, you're using it, it's like Shlichus Yad when you have a pikadon. If you take here it's not even your pikadon. If you take a look in Source Yud, Hilchos Gzela Simen Shin and Tesefet, based on the Gemara, Afilo Lokech B'Sheila. You just take something you're planning to return immediately. Shlomi Das Abaylim, even though you're not harming or injuring the object in any way. Nikra Gazlan, that's considered to be an act of Gzela in the normal course.
All he's doing is holding it like this.
That's Lokech.
Is there a difference in the
Lokech? You're taking the item.
Like a coffee table book at someone's house which is meant to be read.
So again, if we have something which clearly is meant to be read, it's put in a context where the minhag is that it's put out for people to take, so then that would be perfectly okay. It's certainly not okay to just walk into a person's, you know, bookcase and to take out a rare sefer. Right. They have the Siddur HaShloah or something, and you know, you decide you gotta, you know, to throw it up in the air, you know, and see if you can catch it on the way down. So I don't think that there's a minhag or an expectation that anybody would be okay with that, even if they happen to be your best friend.
But does the Olam expect, like, if you go in a house and there's a coffee table with like an encyclopedic type book, the expectation?
I think so. I think that's the whole concept. That's the whole concept of a coffee table. Right. That's the idea of a coffee table book.
I want you to read it.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. It's common nowadays for people to write in the cover of the Sefer Lashem Ha'aretz Mo'ah.
Yes.
So can you pick up a Sefer just to see if somebody wrote that inside? Is that already a problem?
I think that to the extent that we have sort of this general license that we say that all Svarim are meant for people to use, so that means to use for legitimate purposes, to learn from it on some level. I don't know that it means that you're curious to see whether they wrote the words L'Shem Ha'aretz Simloah in it.
But this book is mine, right?
Right, right. But if you're looking at that just to see whether they're giving you permission, presumably they said L'Shem Ha'aretz Simloah, and it's a regular yeshiva where they follow the general minhag that everybody can use the svarim as long as they don't remove it from its place, and they return it, you know, to, they keep it within Dalet Amos, and you're just looking to see that he doesn't have a notation, oh, it's usher to use this without permission, so then I think it's okay to open it up and look at L'Shem Ha'aretz Simloah, and then, you know, open up to whatever, you know, page in the sefer, whatever daf or amud that you want to learn from.
I would say yes. that L'Shem Ha'aretz Simloah, and then it usually says Birushus, that in itself is a heter to...
I don't know that Shem Aretz Simloah is giving you a heter if that's the question that you're asking. If it is a base medrash where there's otherwise this type of a policy, then I think that it would be consistent with the heter as opposed to with the yisur if that's what the person wrote. Now, what about the guest in the house? So the Shulchan Aruch, Ibn Ezra in Kiddushin, Simon Kofches, talks about what if you took some food that the host gave you, and you gave it to the woman next to you, and you were Mekadesh the woman. And now the Baal HaBayis, let's say the Baal HaBayis didn't give you the food. You just took the food on your own. Now the Baal HaBayis comes home, and he says, oh, why didn't you give better food? So in this particular case, we say, Eina Mekadeshah. So that, then we would be worried that he only said that Shelo Lisbai Yishimo, and this is not a case where we're necessarily saying that you knew that the Baal HaBayis would be comfortable with your taking the food. So this is sort of a case where everybody would say that it doesn't become retroactively mutter. It's not a mitzvah, you know, you may have used it to be Mekadesh and Isha, but it wasn't set aside to be Mekayim, you know, a mitzvah per se. That wasn't the intrinsic purpose of this food. However, in Kitsha B'davah She'en Baal HaBayis Makpid Alav, if you would be Mekadesh with something that Baal HaBayis was not Makpid about, like for example a tomorrow or an egos, just one date or one nut or one grape for that matter, so then we say, Harezu Mekadeshes Misafik, then she would be Mekadeshes Misafik. So the question is, why is she only Mekadeshes Misafik? Maybe she should be Mekadeshes Bevadai. So some say, yes, yeah, she really would be Mekadeshes Bevadai. However, the reason why we say it's a suffix in this particular case is because it's a suffix whether the tamara or the egos is worth a shavuot. Right. But if you knew for sure that that this was something that the Baal HaBayis was a makpid about, according to everything that we said up until now, it could be that this would, you know, completely belong to the individual. In fact, the Ramah says, if you were specifically given an item from the Baal HaBayis and you took your portion and you were Mekadesh with it, Ma'arit says it could be maybe you had to do a Kinyan Agbah for it, and you were Mekadesh, so then the woman would be Mekudeshes. If you just took from what was sort of in the middle of the table, that wouldn't work. It would have to be the portion that was placed in front of you that would not be subsequently taken back by the Baal HaBayis. The same thing if you were a wedding guest. So if you're given a portion, so whatever's left over, presumably you can take home because it's not just going to be thrown out otherwise. That would be perfectly okay. But if it's not a portion that was given to you, so the Shevet Alevi, if you look at source Tezayin, the Shevet Alevi says that if it's not necessarily going to be thrown out, even if you had family members who were invited to a wedding, but they didn't show up to the wedding, so they're only invited to be, if they're going to show up to eat at the wedding. It doesn't mean that because they got a wedding invitation that you have a right to bring home food to them afterwards. You told the caterer how many people said yes and were going to show up. So therefore, you can't take the food home from them unless it's America, he says. America, he says, there's this crazy thing that goes on in America. They have entire pieces of chicken and entire portions of supper that they just throw into the garbage after the wedding is over. If there is, you know, such a crazy, you know, place that does that, Zorkim la'ashpa li'ibud, menkach v'kach, ala ba'abayis, ha'masvim l'shalom, the ba'abayis is going to pay for it anyway. So he says, even though it's clearly an issa ba'atashkis if they're throwing it in the garbage, but nonetheless, if that is what's happening, the komakum came into kach no'ogim, me'elo anashim, and manas omdim li'ibud, it's just going to be thrown on anyway, shuvei makbid alem, then for sure, there's no hakbada regarding it, and you'll be allowed to give it to bring it home to your children, and presumably you could be Mekadesh and Isha with it as well. However, he says, otherwise, he says it would not be permissible. Now, my wife and I have gone to weddings where we wanted to take home some extra dessert, like some extra cookies and so forth for the children. But we go over to the Bali Asimcha and we ask the Bali Asimcha if it's okay to take it home, because we don't assume if we're taking it for ourselves, so it's perfectly fine. We're going to take it in the car for our children.
You just
so
take a lot
it's
for
not. Right, oh. Right. Well, what ends up happening is by the time we get home, nothing is left anyway. But,
right.
The, thing is,
right.
But the thing is that we do ask for the permission, you know, before we take it in those circumstances. Now,
but then you put the Baal Simcha in a very between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah.
If he says no, he says, what a crazy turkey I want.
Oh, so that's the question. No, but the problem about embarrassment is only if it's after the fact. This is before the fact. So they have the ability to say no if it's before the fact. The fact that you ask, so they're happy to be asked.
He would be embarrassed to tell
before the fact.
You're saying, Carmen, like maybe like a little bit of the Chafetz Chaim situation, you know, a little bit. Okay, so maybe. You have to be careful about that.
I don't
okay,
think they throw the food out, but I think they own it.
But I think that if you have a general expectation that it probably would be okay anyway, you're doing it as a midas chasidus, I think under those circumstances, I think it basically would be okay if you're just doing it as a midas chasidus.
They can't, once it's out, now, like once they have those things out, they can't put it back.
I'll cook stuff.
Oh, sometimes that's true, but there are certain things that they actually can give away afterwards, so you have to figure out what falls into that category.
What they have left over. When they put out, they can't do anything for health reasons, but sometimes they'll throw out the stuff that's in the back, the full trays, and sometimes they'll give it away.
Well, the Sheir Levi doesn't only talk about the Macham. You look at his shoe, he also talks about the Prochem. Presumably, they're not under an obligation under, you know, the food safety departments of the state to throw out the flowers. So sometimes people just take these giant, beautiful bouquets. So that presumably is not something you're authorized to do. Or you take like extra benches. So, you know, you're entitled to one bench. You're not necessarily entitled to take, you know, I don't know that you would want to take. But
you don't want to take,
you're not going
to,
right, yours. Right. Right. But so there's a limit in terms of what the expectation is. So let's say you're a hotel guest. You're a hotel guest. You opened up one of the shampoos. You opened up one of the soaps. So they're just going to throw it out. If it was half used already, you may as well take the rest. But it's not necessarily so pushered that if you stayed for 2 days and you didn't get around to using the second shampoo, when they used to give out shampoos, now they just kind of like have these dispensers. Or when they have the, or they give out a second, you know, soap and you didn't open up the soap, so why wouldn't they use it for another guest if you didn't open it up? If you didn't open it up, they're probably not going to throw it out.
I
don't know. So there would really be a question of trying to find out what the minhag is, if there is a minhag, to, you know, try to, you know, find out if this is sort of the general practice of this hotel, that they're comfortable with the guests taking taking this stuff. But to me, it's not a double pushup.
Most hotels, I mean, I worked with hotels a lot.
Okay.
They were never mock-teed on the shampoo.
What's this in your room?
Right.
To take a handful from the maid's cart?
No, that's something else.
My point simply is, I don't think that it would be a double push. The last thing that I think you would have to do, you'd have to do your research, because it's not something that, you know, automatically we go to waste afterwards, kind of like along the lines of Shmuel Bozner. The other thing that the Aruch HaShulchan talks about, and the last source over here, is, and when it comes to the talis and the tefillin, so some point out, nowadays it's not so pashut that you could just take tefillin of somebody without asking if you're going to change the knot, because some people would be very mockery about, you know, finding that the tefillin, the knot was changed. Not everybody knows how to change the knot back. So there are limitations in terms of what you could do, and even with the tzitzis, the post can talk about if you're going to get it very sweaty, so then you can't assume that there was necessarily permission on the part of the Baal HaBayis, on the part of the owner of the tzitzis. The Aruch HaShulchan has the famous case of Nischafalo Kelev HaChafotza Beveis HaAvel Beveis HaMishteh. There's a Gemara in Baba Basa Daf Membav that indicates that if you got like the wrong item back from an Uman, you gave to like a dry cleaner and they gave you the wrong item, sometimes you can assume that, well, they were given permission to sell or to give away, you know, somebody else's item. So if your item got lost, you could take this item. But if it's someone based Mishter or based Avil, so nobody's giving permission to take somebody else's clothing if you ended up with somebody else's boots or galoshes. But the Aruch HaShulchan says there were certain types of things like the galoshes. So there's an assumption that these are such trivial items that when they are left, that there is sort of like a mechila, that somebody took your galoshes, so then you'd be allowed to take their galoshes if it's the last ones that are left. But if you don't know that somebody specifically took yours, you just come home and it turns out you took somebody else's coat by mistake, and you look in the lining and you discover it's somebody else's coat. I remember once that I was in shul in Muncie, and they said, oh, can somebody, you know, anybody who took Rappaport's raincoat by mistake, you know, please return it. And I was thinking, okay, you know, they really should, you know, I feel bad for Rappaport. Then like a few days later, I looked at the lining in my raincoat and it said Rappaport. And I said, oh, I'm not Rappaport. And I realized I better get it back to Rappaport. I had no right under those conditions to wear my coat, because I happened to leave, you know, to wear his coat, because I happened to leave my coat, you know, in the coat room. Right. But otherwise, what Moshe says, that the same thing that the Aruch HaShulchan talks about in terms of galoshes can also be true with respect to umbrellas and coats and things of that variety. But he says, Tov lahanin zevachom makom makom ayidei Rosh HaKahal. Just like the Lahoris Nassim said that there should be an announcement by the Rosh Yeshiva, says there should be an announcement by the heads of the shul, that it's written in the bulletin boards that we have this particular takana, that if somebody took your galoshes or raincoat or umbrella, so, you know, you'd be able to take the one that's left over. And then if it was really important to that person that they get, you know, theirs back and they find you or whatever, so you'll make the necessary switch at that point in time. Okay, stop here.
It's probably not the right size.
I think it's the right size.
How did the